it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Jean Bolduc.
Okay, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Jean Bolduc, your host. My cat is with me on the top of my chair behind me. Our listeners are accustomed to this. And I am joined today by Sharon Hirsch, my old friend. We were just talking about our being old friends for ramping up to about two decades now, which means, of course, that we must have gone to high school together, which we didn't. And Sharon is the CEO and president of the recently rebranded organization, Positive Childhood Alliance of North Carolina. Positive Childhood Alliance North Carolina, previously Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. And Sharon is going to tell us about this rebranding process, which as long as I've known you, I feel like it's almost every minute that I've known you, you've probably wanted to do this rebranding, and I know the reasons why, but I'd like for you to talk about it. How are you as we launch into the very important month of April, very important for your organization? How are you today? You seem like you're in a good mood.
I'm in a great mood. We're super excited about this rebranding that you just mentioned. We have for a long time had to say to folks that, you know, they heard our name and they assumed that we were working in the child welfare system, or they think that our job was really difficult and that we must talk about child abuse all day and how hard and difficult that is. But our first name used to be Prevent. But I think folks often don't understand what prevention really is and how it works.
Right.
And the communication science is very clear that you need to talk about what you want to see in the world, not what you're trying to stop.
Right.
And so exactly. Being the Positive Childhood Alliance gives us the opportunity to talk about where our work is headed, what we want for kids and families, what kinds of supports and structures need to be in place for families to be successful. And it's going to allow us to change the narrative about what families need for their kids to grow up safe, healthy, and thriving.
Well,
so it's
I
just
mean, you know,
incredible.
You know, they say in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. And if you're trying to either raise money or get programs going and just introduce yourself as an organization, the first thing you have to do is explain, no, it's not that. Then, that really puts you behind the eight ball, doesn't it?
It does. And we're not behind that eight ball anymore.
Yeah.
And it gives us just this amazing opportunity to really engage with folks about all the things that families need to be successful, starting with economic mobility and financial security. You know, the things that all families need. Access to supports, resources.
Right.
Parenting is a really hard thing. And nobody does it by themselves. So being able to talk about what kind of supports in the workplace, in your community, in your congregation, families can really benefit from, and we'll see great returns on it. And we can talk about the public policy arena and how we can be investing more in families and why that matters for our state's future health and prosperity as well.
And
so
this
it really
is, this is exactly the right time of year to be getting into that particular element as well. I think you and I probably talk to each other around this time most years. And I say this every time, I don't care, I'm going to say it again. It's budget time, local and state, but especially local municipalities, counties. And county government in North Carolina is where the Health and Human Services budget is, and school board budgets. And right now is where your local town council and county commissioners, they really want to hear from, you know, this is not lip service on their part.
Right.
They really want to hear from individuals and organizations, what do you need in order to do your work and to make our community better? You know, communities are always a work in progress, thank goodness. They really do want to hear from people. If all you did is send the county manager, I'm going to pick an easy example, is to send an email to the county manager and say, you know, I'd really appreciate it if our local parks were more accessible for kids in wheelchairs, because my kid's in a wheelchair, and only this park and that park has, a walking trail that's paved that's possible for us to use. It's a one thing. It's a really it, compared to the county budget, it's a really small thing. But that's a really tangible, meaningful thing for someone who needs it. And, politicians are trying to look at the big picture all the time. It really helps them to hear about the nuts and bolts of what can we do that would help make your child's childhood better. Just, Saturdays would be better if we could just roll up to the farmer's market because there was a paved walking path there. There are a million things like that that the families across the community, once people start talking about this stuff in groups, they probably can easily come up with two dozen things that altogether wouldn't cost $50,000, but would really help. So it's not always about money. It's just about the county government knowing what these things are and how they would help specifically. And then, having a request. I mean, it really does matter. It really does matter to the people who are writing up the budget to have, they need ideas. They can't think of everything.
Well, and it's their job to be listening
Yeah.
to the families in their communities. And the greatest thing that they can do is to be listening to families and thinking about their lived experience and what are the services and supports families need. And
Right.
when you start with that question, you will get lots of ideas
Yeah, you'll get
about the
more
things
ideas
that
than you could
families.
probably use, right?
Yeah, and I think the thread that runs through it though is building a sense of community.
Right.
We've talked for years about the importance of connections
Yeah.
and building community. And when you have a positive community environment, it's easier to raise your children. When you've
Right.
got places for them to go, whether it's your local library and story time when your kids are younger, to the parks and recs department, to after school programs. I mean, all of those things are part of what builds community for kids and families and
Right.
supports parents in
Right.
their balancing of work and family.
Scouts and sports and all of those things. I saw a wonderful interview with a guy who's written a book about this very thing. And one of the things that he says is that, and he and his wife have six kids, so I give him credibility points on that. He said that, when you and I were kids, Sharon, long, long ago, there we you often hear people saying, well, we were playing outside until the street lights came on and then we came in and all that. Yeah, well, you could do that because my mom was home, most of the moms on my street were home, and that's nice, but I don't feel a great urge to consider that a fix. Because it wasn't just that. It was also, I had Girl Scouts after school. A lot of the kids, participated in sports after school. So you have scout leaders, you have coaches, you have Sunday school teachers, you have people in various adults in various capacities. And needless to say, I count teachers among those since I email one of my high school teachers every week, all the time. I never stop communicating with her, try as she might to discourage me. A teacher that connects with you and stays with you, you can't put a price on that. I mean, it's amazing for me.
Yeah, even this morning, our team had a staff meeting, and we started out by having some connection time because that's how we like to start our staff meetings.
I
But
like.
today's prompt in our breakout rooms was to talk about our own positive childhood experiences, just one memory.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to talk to a small group and to hear folks talking about their grandparents, talking about neighbors, talking about teachers, talking about their childhood friends and what a
Right.
difference they've made in their lives.
Right.
All of that sense of community, I think many of us still have it, but we don't know our neighbors the way that we used to know our neighbors
Right. That's
back
right.
in the day, back
That's
when we
right.
were growing up. And there was more of a civic and community spirit.
Right.
And we'd love to see more of that happen again. When I talk about, when folks ask me what they can do, the first thing I say is get civically engaged, be
Right.
involved in your community.
Yeah.
It's voting is, of course, one piece of it, but really talking to people and developing relationships and hearing about what folks need.
Right. And that, you know, if you don't start anywhere else, you can go to a county commissioner's meeting when they're talking about the budget. Meet your county commissioners. They
Yes.
are live human beings. Shake hands with them and, you know, introduce yourself. Tell them about the things you care about. And you'd be surprised how much they'll stay up with you after that, because
oh, they will.
At least right now, that will separate you from others in the community who just want to maybe make noise about an issue, but not really work on solving it. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Sharon some more. I anticipate that we're going to discuss the impact of social media on this. Not necessarily a positive one, but we're talking with Sharon Hirsch from Positive Childhood Alliance, North Carolina. And you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Sharon Hirsch of Positive Childhood Alliance, North Carolina. I love the name. Here's what I love the most when I saw all the branding information that came to me in the last several days. I said, oh, this is the greatest thing, because this is what I would think of, right? You don't have to change your email.
No, it's not only that, our acronym's the same. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people in our networks call us PCANC. We're
right.
Just reframing the conversation.
Right, right. I love it. That's money. That's money in the bank right there. And I saw that you've got the, you know, the domains and everything. And you can go, by the way, folks, if you want to learn more about the organization, you can go to pcanc.org. No? No?
No, it's positivechildhoodalliancenc.org.
Okay.
The domain had never been PCANC.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought I went to that. You know what happened? I'm sure that my computer remembered that and found, this is the problem with these darn computers. They figure it out for you.
They do.
So that's slightly alarming. Okay, so Positive Childhood Alliance, NC.org. And you can learn anything and everything that you could possibly need to know about this organization, including how to support it, how to donate, how to do free online training, how to get your, if you are a member of a civic organization and you want to become part of this alliance, listen, Sharon.
We want positive childhood allies.
The best
join us.
Thing about your rebrand is that word, that magic word, alliance, because
yes.
You can't run out of allies. You need allies.
That's exactly right.
Anywhere and everywhere. And that was the other thought I had about the idea of connection and about other people, about, you know, I remember in my neighborhood growing up, if I misbehaved in the presence of one of our neighbors, their mom had the same authority that my mom had to take care of business. And
that's right.
Just to be sure, I'm not talking about corporal punishment. I'm just saying that mom would have the phone in her hand and would be on with my mom and say, Jeannie's on the way home right now. She can't be over here to play for the rest of the afternoon because of these reasons. Sometimes she was really making that call, sometimes not, because moms are smart. And,
right.
You know, I would, as a kid, wouldn't necessarily realize that I might have been over at Kevin's house because my mother wasn't home right then. But anyway, you know, moms, In my opinion, mothers were the original social media. Mothers are, as a category of people, are extremely social animals. And I think that before there was Twitter, there were all the moms in my neighborhood. And I'm not sure that they wouldn't train carrier pigeons to go from one house to the other to communicate what naughty kids were up to. But the advent of social media, while there are extremely marvelous upsides to it, has made some things more difficult, especially for children. It's caused, I think, isolation. I think that people have underestimated the addictive properties of looking at a screen, the amount of screen time, the amount of, I'm going to use a term here, I hope it's not too pejorative, the amount of brain dead screen time of just making you a zombie by, cat videos and things that are just, oh, look at that. And then you swipe, and then there's another one, and then there's another one, and then an hour and a half has gone by. I think that I think that's true for absolutely, that's not unique for children, but my observation, just this is just non-scientific observation of my young grandchildren, ages 6 and 4, is that how they quiet down immediately when the television comes on, so they're allowed to watch a video, or they're looking at screens, something on a phone. When you understand children and how their energy tends to be constant, sometimes to the exhaustion of the adults in their lives, let's be real, to see that shut off like a switch, I think it should be more alarming to people in some ways. And I think that it's, it's not that they're relaxing. It's that they've shut off. And that is the embodiment of an ever-learning mind that has hit pause. I don't know that that's such a good thing on for long stretches.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And all that we know about brain development in our children, I
Right.
mean, our children's brains are growing so fast, especially when they're really little.
Yes.
But the biggest builder of children's brains is our relationships.
Right.
Just like they're the greatest healer of trauma for those of us in adulthood.
Right.
When you're doing something passive and you're not engaged,
Right.
the one of the biggest ways to build a baby's brain is that whole concept of serve and return.
Yeah.
Peekaboo. And just how wonderful it is when you look at a baby that you've never seen before and you just smile at it and watch them react and
React,
smile.
right, and then
I
you
mean,
react to that. It
and
just goes back and forth.
the back and forth is how kids' brains develop. And I've been thinking a lot about it, not just in terms of social media, but what happened to our kids during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
You think so much, I think so much about the children that were in kindergarten, first, second grade.
Oh, man.
In those years where the old book, Everything I Needed to Learn, I Learned in Kindergarten. You
Yeah.
had kindergarten on Zoom? I mean, what in the world? How? That's where children learned how to share, how to say
Right.
please and thank you,
Or they didn't.
or they didn't, and to not push, and to, all of those things,
And wait
how
your
to,
turn and all of that stuff.
all of that stuff didn't happen for thousands and thousands of children all across the country.
Right.
And I think we'll be seeing the impact of that for a long time. I hear frequently from teachers that it's a real thing in their classrooms,
I
that
believe I'm,
those
and that's the part of catch up that's going now. That you're not going to see that measured in state tests and
Yeah, and then
typical academic
conversely,
measures, right?
the middle school and high school kids that also didn't have that really critical
Yeah.
interpersonal interaction, relationship building things in the years when they're supposed to be trying to push away from their parents
Right.
and establish themselves independently. In order to do that, you've got to have a network of friends and
Yeah.
support, and to not have been able to develop those social skills as a 15 and 16-year-old, they've really missed out on something critical, and we haven't valued that enough in our
Right.
culture, because so much of academia these days is about tests and not about the social emotional learning and the relationship piece. And I think the pandemic taught us how important that is. I think back on, I got great grades in high school. I don't think those grades have mattered anything for the work that I do, but I think that the way I relate to people and the way I and my ability to communicate with folks about these issues are the foundational things that I
Right.
learned in school.
That's right.
And when we're on our phones all the time, or we're on Zoom instead of in a classroom and interacting with people, we're missing on that incredibly important social development. And the last thing I want to say about that too is that because social connections are a protective factor, and those are social connections for parents are really important, but conversely, the risk factor is isolation.
Right.
And when we're only on looking at our phones, only on Zoom, not interacting with people, we are effectively isolated. And
Right.
it's why our US Surgeon General, Vivek Murphy, talks so much about the pandemic of loneliness in our country. And it contributes to so many other things, depression and suicide, all of the things that we don't ever want to see happening with folks are rooted in relationship.
Right.
So
That's, I mean,
relationships are at the they're at the crux of it all. I mean, when I worked in social services, my former director used to say that relationships were like location and real estate. They're the key to how you get all the work done.
Right.
They're the it's
Well,
it's just
that
it's
just that is exactly, is that Sammy you're talking about? That, I mean,
usually
that,
it's Dan Hudgens.
okay. That is so on target, exactly right. And boy, how that translates in the business sector, I can't even begin to elaborate on how incredibly vital it's, you know, I'm sure that businesses just broadly are threat they're just thrashing now, just thrashing around trying to figure it out. I as the pandemic hit, we were out driving around because that was like one of the only activities you could do safely is to just drive around. We were out driving around. I think we were in Raleigh at some point, and watching all these construction projects of new commercial space. And I just looked at them and I said to my husband, "Look at that. That's a developer who's going to be bankrupt soon because they're going to finish that building." And nobody's moving in there. There's just the drop off for demand for workspace, commercial workspace is going to be dramatic after this pandemic is over because people have been working at home, figured out that they can do it,
Well,
and they're not going to need that much commercial space anymore. That's the thing though, Sharon. They still need the human contact and the collaborative environment, at least part of the time. That doesn't
exactly.
mean you need the whole building, though. It means you need meeting space.
Yeah, and there are opportunities in that too. And I mean, and to me, the biggest opportunity is helping employers understand that our care economy. We've got one of the big things that's made it really difficult for a lot of people to go back to work has been the lack of access to childcare. And so many people, I mean, it was awful trying to figure out how you did your job on Zoom all day long while you were taking care of your child behind
Yeah,
you.
with the kids,
Not
my
optimal.
cat is annoying. Wait until you have a toddler
Right,
or two.
but there the availability of childcare is just not there. It's a crisis, and we've been saying it's a crisis for many, many years, but it has gotten so much worse.
That's
We
right.
also don't have we don't have paid family and medical leave.
Right.
If you work for an employer that has it, you are one of the lucky, privileged few.
You're under the golden
And I'm
umbrella.
proud,
That's right.
and I'm really proud to say that we offer it here at Prevent Child Abuse, or excuse me, Positive Childhood Alliance.
Ah, I got her. I
Or
knew
Care
you'd do it
Alliance.
once.
And we are really proud of that. We have a
You
couple of
should be.
staff that are going to have babies this year, and we're really
Yay!
pleased that they can take the time off that they need to take care of those babies and recover themselves
Yes.
before coming back to work.
Yeah.
And it's an investment in the future workforce. We talk a lot about how much the downstream consequences of child maltreatment are in our in North Carolina. I used to tell folks that it cost us $2 billion every year on the downstream consequences. It still does, but people don't understand $2 billion. It's too big a number.
Right.
What that translates to, though, Jean, it's $4,000 every single minute in North Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah, you
That's a
get that.
lot. That's a
It's a
lot.
lot, and that's in our criminal justice system. That's in our healthcare system, it's our education system. But the biggest chunk of that expense is lost worker productivity. Because adults experienced these adverse things in childhood and it was never addressed. And so those are your poor performers at work. It's creating productivity issues because you've got folks out sick because they've got chronic issues or they're depressed and aren't working optimally. If we just invest in kids and families and in these family-friendly workplace policies and things like financial and economic mobility investments like Medicaid expansion and living wages, our families are going to be more secure and more productive, and they're going to be better in the workplace.
The healthcare outcomes, how that would drive positive healthcare outcomes. You're talking about less heart disease, less diabetes, less hypertension, cancer. All of these things, are driven by these social supports. And, people think of, we're talking about connection and isolation, and people think of these as soft skills. We need to come up with another word for that, because there's nothing soft about it. It's absolutely vital. It's life-preserving skills. And now my skill is to look at my watch and realize that we're way over time. I have to take another quick break. We're talking with Sharon Hirsch, and we're going to be right back in just a minute. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, as per usual, I have the best conversations with Sharon while we're during the break. So I'm going to ask her to rewind and tell me some of the things that she just told me. She's probably like, but I just told you that. I don't know where to begin except to say, I did notice during the pandemic that when direct payments were made to American families, that I learned about that's never been done by the federal government before. It was done by the federal government, which I would just remind everybody was a combination of a Democratic Congress and a Republican president, that it was done that way because this is just simple. This is the most incredibly simple idea. It's the most simple and efficient way to get the money into the economy. And this allowed people to buy the goods and services. Here's what it did. It said to taxpayers a thing that conservatives generally like, which is, it's your money, you figure it out.
That's right. And that child tax credit in particular lifted more kids out of poverty than we've ever seen.
Yes.
And we let it expire, and we've now seen a resulting surprise, huge increase in our child poverty rate all across the country.
Of course, because if you take it out and then you know.
Right. But the research is so clear, Gene. We did a paper a couple of years ago that compiled a lot of the research that anytime you put more money in the hands of families that are raising children, whether it's through raising the minimum wage, an earned income tax credit, SNAP benefits, Medicaid expansion, all of the housing subsidies, all of those things are associated with reductions in CPS reporting and foster care entries, which is what we want for our kids. We want positive experiences. We don't want kids known to our child welfare system. And so, for example, states that have increased their minimum wage, for every $1 increase in a state's minimum wage, CPS reports drop 10%. We have not increased our minimum wage in North Carolina since 2009. When you think about what's happened with inflation just since the pandemic and how difficult it's been, what our housing inflation has been, what food inflation has been, trying to make it on anything close to the minimum wage, it's unconscionable in this country that we think that families could survive on that level of wage.
Well, that's just, that's national denial is all that is. I mean, it's not like anybody really thinks, oh yeah, $7.25, I can make it on that. Come on.
Yeah. But why are we not having a conversation about it? We know that families are going to be more successful. Kids are going to thrive when their parents can pay for safe, affordable housing, when they can buy clothes that matter. We just compiled some information from our friends at State DSS, who distributed some ARPA dollars, American Rescue Plan Act funds, to the agencies that deliver evidence-based parenting programs and allowed them to give families concrete economic supports. On average, families only asked for $201. We're not talking a huge amount of money, but what a difference that made, because we don't have a cash assistance system in North Carolina.
Right.
One family had a broken toilet and could not afford to get their toilet fixed, and they were using a bucket in their house.
Oh, come on now.
This agency was allowed to buy a toilet in Catawba County, North Carolina, able to buy a toilet, bought them cleaning supplies, bought them toilet paper, and now their little ones are able to potty train at home.
I like it.
To think that we didn't have another mechanism to help families in a situation like that in 2023?
Yeah, that's just the obvious, how broken is it, measure, right? Like we were just talking about, go to your county commissioners, go to your government officials and say, I'm not asking you to buy me a Rolls Royce. I'm saying the ramp on my deck is broken. Can you get me some help to get it fixed? There's a lot of things just in the housing area that are like that, that are just like, I'm not asking you to pay off my house, but I have a hole in my roof. Can somebody come out and help me get it fixed?
Right. Or I'm going back to work after having a baby, and I need someone to help me pay for childcare for the first 2 months before my paychecks really kick in.
Right. Right.
Those kinds of things that were examples of how those ARPA dollars were spent, and now to not have them, once all that money expires, what are families going to do?
Well, they're
going to
suffer, Sharon. I mean, what you were telling me during the break is that, and in an odd way, this is sort of an interesting indicator in my mind that the majority, more than half of the reports on the spectrum of child maltreatment are neglect. They're not abused.
Way more than half. It's 80%.
It's 80%. Okay, well, that is more than half. Yes.
Yeah, significantly more than
yes.
half.
And so what that says to me is that if you can interrupt that, those cases at that stage and deliver that support, it can be vastly more beneficial downstream. It's much harder to get into it when everything's really turned terrible.
It'll reduce the burnout of the child welfare staff too. It really is win-win-win.
Right.
Good
well, so, so they, everybody has our advice on this, and that's it. That's our ruling on this. So we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to come back and finish out with Sharon Hirsch, who is the president and CEO of Positive Childhood Alliance. I've gotten it, North Carolina. I've gotten it right almost every time. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Sharon Hirsch from Positive Childhood Alliance. My tongue isn't working today. Positive Childhood Alliance, North Carolina. By the way, your organization in its current and previous iterations, I see by the logo on your screen, is now 45 years old, which doesn't seem possible that it's 45 when I see what that year is when it started, 1979. And I'm saying that just because I remember 1979 very well. Anyway, when I was 3 years old. So what I wanted to share with you, which I think is a good lead off, is I had reason to communicate recently with, on something having nothing to do with this. Well, I guess it had a little bit to do with this. I was inquiring with the Orange County Board of Elections about a runoff that we're going to have in the school board race that will occur at the same time as, I guess it's, there. If there's a Republican runoff, I don't know who the candidates are, not relevant to my story. And so I wrote this email to the director of the Board of Elections, and she gave me a really helpful and comprehensive answer to this question, which was, how does it work? and when will this happen and what's it going to cost? And she wrote back, and then I had one follow-up question. And I wrote, when I wrote the follow-up question, she responded with obvious, sincere gratitude, because what I told her is, thank you for the work that you do. Orange County, like many counties around our state, has reliably accurate, well-run, inscrutable election processes. We get results that night. When there have been recounts, they have been recounted to find out that it was counted correctly in the first place. And we've had some elections that were close that came down to fewer than 10 votes, came down to the same 10 votes on the recount. And I said, you know, I know it's not easy to be an election official right now. And I really appreciate the work that you do and how you do it and how you've been doing it for many years. So I would just say to everybody to remember, as Sharon is about to say, the very same thing. It's an election year. And make yourself aware of who your candidates are, whoever they are on either side. Ask them about the issues that you care about. And you certainly care about, where do my children fit on your agenda for your term of office while you're in office? What are you going to do to make childhood experiences better? Yeah, better, safer, stronger, smarter, all of those things. And this cuts across everything from the public safety budget to school budgets to every budget, county budgets for interventions for any number of reasons, parks and recreation, and all of it. It's all in the mix of how our community expresses its priorities for family, the families who are, by the way, not for nothing, who are paying the bills, paying these taxes to make all this happen. So get to know your public officials. But folks, I really mean this most sincerely. If you have a minute, thank a poll worker. Thank the elections officials in your community, wherever you are, because without them, I assure you, the election cycle won't matter much anymore, because it's hard to be an election official right now. They just as our children need us, these election officials right now really, really need our support, really need it. And they need to be safe and satisfied in their work. Okay, that's the end of my speech, Sharon.
Okay, well, let me tell your listeners that I really want them to be asking candidates this year what their positions are on the issues that matter to kids and families.
Right.
Across the ideological spectrem, do you support paid family and medical leave for all across the lifespan? Right. So that when you're having a new baby, you can take the time to take care of that baby, to establish strong parent-child nurturing and attachment bonds that are critical to children's brain development, for women to recover, for dads to be able to do that same parent-child attachment.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
Then later in life, being able to take time off to take care of your elderly parents, or if someone else in the family gets sick, we shouldn't lose our jobs because we've got caring responsibilities.
Right.
Asking folks at the county level, does your county and city government, do you offer paid family leave for your employees? Also for making it the policy of your community.
Right.
Child care subsidies. Are you going to support investments in child care? They're critical for going back to work. Do you support the child tax credit at the federal level? We've got folks running for Congress this year. Ask the congressional representatives, are you going to support that child tax credit being reinstated and right. really making a difference for families? We've saw during the pandemic what an impact that could make.
Right.
Do you support other economic supports for families? Thinking about home visiting and parenting education programs that are so woefully underfunded in our state, would you support funding a parenting or family support program or a family resource center in your community so that there's a place families can go to get the resources and support they need without having to go to the public agencies that have the authority right. to take children?
Right.
These are critical
all of those
questions.
Things. And as you've gone through every one of those things, in my description, all of those things are nonpartisan issues that it doesn't
That's
matter
right.
which side of the political spectrum you're on. Your candidate should be nodding and agreeing that, yes, of course, I'm in favor of those things. And
Well,
please
yeah.
give more information about what you want and where it would go. And you know, it's the voters that sometimes drive these things to be installed. So do it.
Yeah, and you can go to positivechildhoodalliancenc.org and go to our policy page. We have a list of those policy priorities and background research on why we support those issues that can help you as you advocate with your county commissioner or
Right.
city
During
council or...
April, which is Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Yes, it's a great opportunity to talk about these things. We're kicking off the month this year with a large pinwheel planting at the State Farmers Market. So if you ever get over to Raleigh for the State Farmers Market, you'll see that great big pinwheel garden that we're planting on April 2nd. Friday, April 5th is Wear Blue Day. And we'd love to see folks adorned in your favorite shade of blue, whether it's Carolina blue or Duke blue or something else in between.
Could
And
be Yukon blue.
And you can take a photo and post it on social media and let us see it or share it with us at Positive Childhood Alliance North Carolina and help us raise awareness. Because every time we do that awareness raising, we're helping to change the story and the narrative and helping folks understand what it is that families need for their kids to thrive.
Well, Sharon, you know, thank you for all this. And of course, for all the work that you do and you've been doing for I don't want to talk about it, for how long we've known each other. And you've been advocating for kids since you and I were in elementary school, which was not that long ago. And you continue to do great work. And I'm glad to know you. And please come back. Don't make it only annual. Come back in the fall sometime and tell me what you're doing to plan my Christmas party. And we'll look forward to getting back together at our next opportunity. So folks, you know, if you're going out, and especially if you're celebrating victory for your team, please be safe. And if you're staying in, keep it right here on 97.9 The Hill.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.